Welcome everyone to the third webinar with Alan Gordon, LCSW. We've had two of these so far, and they have been tremendous successes. I found them personally very inspiring, and I noticed that in our chat rooms that we have every Saturday, they get referred to a lot. And then when I brought this up, a lot of the people who are in the chat rooms are also on our forum, and there seemed to be a lot of excitement, so I'm really looking forward to this. The topic of the day is going to be on anxiety and focusing on the breath. I'm particularly looking forward to this because I know that I do this. I know that I'm going to profit from this one. So I'm looking forward to this. Alan has told me that I do something called galloping, and I'm eager to learn about this. And I've noticed that ever since he told me that, I think I do it much more when I'm chatting with him. So we will see.
I'm in your head now.
I know, absolutely. You totally are. The first caller is John. And both John and Alan are on the line and unmuted. Do you want to just start up?
Hello.
Hi, John.
Yes, sir.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks for calling in. You're calling from, was it Florida?
Yes, Naples,
Georgia?
Florida.
Okay. All right. Well, if you wouldn't mind, just start off by talking a little bit about what your symptoms are, what your symptoms have been, how long you've had your symptoms for, et cetera.
Sure.
For about a minute or so.
Okay. I've had symptoms on and off looking back now that I've read and studied and done Unlearn Your Pain and some other things. But the main symptoms started about a year and a half ago. Started getting really bad pain in my feet and my heels, and then it kind of worked up to my leg, and then basically when I sat down, kind of in my where my hips hit my chair, and within a month maybe I got to where I couldn't even sit. Went through steroid injections, medicines, physical therapy. Ended up having spine surgery. Probably 6 months into it because there was nothing else to do that I could find, and got a laminectomy. Got zero relief, and then found out about TMS maybe a month or two later during my recovery from surgery, and started working the program and have had a lot of success, but still have chronic pain. Every time I sit, I have pain. So it's one of those things. It's never gone, and I feel like I know a lot of the issues and know a lot of the things, but I still deal with pain in my kind of sciatic nerve on my right side. And when I sit every day.
Okay. And what about with regard to anxiety?
Oh, yeah, there you go. Absolutely. I have anxiety right now for this call, and I'm very...
You have anxiety right now as we're talking?
Yeah, my heart's beating. My head's kind of a little... I just feel light and, just nervous to perform on the call and up to the standards that I want to, and that... It'll help me and other people and, all the typical TMS worry patterns.
So how would you, if you could quantify your anxiety, what would you say it was like right now on a 1 through 10 scale?
Probably like a 6 or 7.
Okay.
Pretty high.
And where do you feel the anxiety?
In my stomach, in my chest, kind of can feel my heartbeat, and kind of in my head. Just feels like a kind of a sense of awareness.
I want you to see if you could bring your attention to the physical sensation of your chest and your stomach. Oftentimes what happens is we generate a feeling, a sensation of anxiety, and we have a tendency to just kind of power through and keep focusing on other things, and this sensation, the physical sensation of anxiety, gets neglected. So I want you just to see if you could take maybe 30 seconds or so and just sit with this feeling of anxiety. Could you describe it for me?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, just,
yeah, just take a moment or two and just sit with this feeling and see if you could just kind of report what you experience, what physical sensations you're feeling in your chest and your stomach. Is it a tightness? Is it narrow? Is it more widespread? Is it hot? Is it cold?
in my chest, it's kind of tightness.
Okay. And
it's kind of, the temperature, I mean, it kind of feels like it goes, like, kind of like it's almost swooshing or something, like up and down.
Okay.
It's not hot or cold, it's just kind of a, it's like you can feel the air more. It's hard to explain.
Okay, so you're really aware of what this physical sensation of anxiety that you feel right now in your chest. Would you say that this is a common feeling that you have? Is it there throughout a lot of the day?
Yes.
Okay. And when did this anxiety start? When were you first aware of it?
In life or tonight?
In life.
Yeah, sorry. Childhood. I mean, I was a very anxious kid. Had a lot of stomach issues and getting sick on the way to school and missing school for stomach issues. And so, I mean, really all the way back to when I was, you know, 8, 9 years old.
Was there any instance or a particular time when you found yourself feeling really anxious, like a story or an incident from when you were a kid?
Daily. You know, I don't know how to go in there without telling everything, but
go ahead.
My mom was, you know, is an alcoholic and been married about, I don't know, 5 or 6 times, and okay. You know, don't know my biological father, and then obviously having several come in and out, and it just was always stress. I mean, every day my mom was off the ringer. I mean, every single day was a disaster, and something was happening, and it was money, and it was this, and we weren't behaving well. And
well, hold on a second. What's happening to your anxiety as you're talking right now?
It's getting worse.
Is it? Okay. I want you. So one of the things I notice is, as you're talking, you have a tendency to really emphasize what you're saying, and what I hear in your voice is your voice seems to be speeding up a little bit. There seems to be a focus on what you're saying or conveying what you're saying across, and I'm wondering if, you know, as you're talking and as you're explaining what's going on, if you're aware, if you're attending to the anxiety that you're feeling.
No, I think I know that I definitely talk faster and faster, and if I'm nervous, whether it's something at work or I'm in sales and it's getting closer to a sale or training people, I talk faster and faster. And
okay, hold on. Stop again. I want you to check in. I want you to see if you can just really attend to this physical sensation of anxiety that you feel. And I want you to think of it like one of the analogies I use is I think of like a baby in the other room, that if there's a baby that's crying, you don't just neglect the baby. You don't just let it cry. What you do is you go over, you attend to the baby, and you soothe it and help bring it down a little bit. And I want you to look at your anxiety right now the same way, because what I hear is there's, as you're talking, there's a rise in anxiety, but that your internal state is being ignored. It's being neglected, and there seems to be a prioritizing of the words you're saying or getting across what you're trying to articulate or even having me understand it. But it seems like the actual internal feeling or sensation or anxiety is getting ignored when that happens. So I want you just to take about 30 seconds or so right now and really see if you could recognize, and even soothe or try to bring down that internal state. I don't want you to think about, you know, if you're doing a good job right now or the number of people listening, or let all of that fall secondary to just checking in, seeing if you could recognize the physical sensation of the anxiety and just taking a couple deep breaths and calming it down a little bit. And I don't want you to try too hard or put too much pressure on yourself. But just see if you can feel the breath coming in and out. What do you notice right now?
Well, the whole time you were talking, I just was breathing slow and trying to tune in, and it definitely calmed. I mean, it did calm a little bit in my inside. I mean,
Good.
The rushing feelings slowed down. I mean, it, I don't know.
Good. All right. So this is something that we want to help you get into a habit of on a regular basis. I think what happens is on the inside you start to really speed up. And if that goes unchecked, then the anxiety is just going to get worse and it could spill into pain. So one of the things that we want to do is just help you check in when it isn't that bad and bring it back down, right? So if it's maybe a 3 or 4 on the anxiety scale, if you just keep talking or keep plowing ahead, then it becomes a 5 or a 6. And then if you keep plowing ahead, it can spill over into pain or other symptoms. But if you're able to check in and just bring it down continuously, what you're able to do is prevent it from escalating. Right. But I want you to continue on telling me what you were telling me. What you were talking about your childhood and some of the things that you were exposed to. Because one of the things we want you to do, we don't want you to just stop everything you're doing and spend your whole day checking in. But we want you to increase your capacity to recognize when your anxiety is getting away from you.
Sure.
And to bring your attention to it and slow it down. All right, so go on.
Okay, so when I was six, my mom got remarried and to who I call my father, and he had legally adopted me and my brother and sister when we were 10, when I was 10. And then they got divorced when I was 12, which really threw me into another spin of rejection, another father lost, and really was the hardest part of my life, I think. In
okay.
terms of moving forward and that feeling of
Hold on. I want you to stop again. What's going on right now as you're talking?
I'm getting all those feelings back.
Good.
All
right. So you see how quick it is? You were able to bring it down. You were able to slow it down. And you returned to what you were talking about. It was maybe 10 or 15 seconds, and already it started rushing back. So I just want you to stop. I just want you to check in. See if you can bring it back down again. Right, so that analogy I used, it's like you're checking on the baby, right? The baby started crying. Instead of ignoring it or just letting it cry, you're attending to it. You're acknowledging it. You're soothing it. You can put your hand on your chest if you want. They've actually found that when you put your hand on your chest, they've done fMRI studies and found that it actually gives people that same sensation that they get when they're being hugged. Right, so that's one way that you could calm yourself down, calm your internal state down. Just put your hand on your chest and see if you could slow it down, slow everything down, slow yourself down.
Yes.
Good. All right. And so when you feel like you've grounded yourself a little, then just continue.
Okay. So, that was my teenage years, and then, they just continued to go through all the low self-esteem and mother continuing to get a little crazier as she drank and very verbal abusive, physically abusive at times, and just wanting to get out of there. I mean, childhood to me was a disaster and terrible, and I just don't like to even think about
it.
Hold on.
I want you to stop. I want you to stop again and just check in. What you're talking about is going to bring up, obviously, some feelings of anxiety and other emotions, and just... Did you notice that as you were talking, your anxiety started to rise again?
Yeah, first little bit it didn't, and then I totally noticed it did.
Good. Right. So one of the things that I get from what you were telling me about your childhood is that it seemed like your emotions or what you were feeling wasn't really attended to or was neglected to some degree.
Yeah. For sure.
Did you feel like your emotions or your feelings or just what you felt like you needed was attended to?
No. I mean, I was always taking care of my sister and my mom.
Mm-hmm.
So the feelings, my feelings were just whatever they were. I was a very emotional kid, just kind of all over the place looking for something.
Uh-huh. So you were an emotional kid, and how did your mom respond when you needed to have your emotional needs met?
She told me to you know, be quiet and stop crying and stop, you know, that I was just, you know, being a baby and I needed to make good grades, do the right thing, do my chores, and
your
keep
mom
going.
Told you that?
Yeah. Push through.
You know, it's interesting because we're talking about this tendency to neglect your own self, to neglect your own internal state. And it seems to me that you're treating your own self in the way that your mom was treating you. I mean, even in the words that you choose, you need to push through. That's exactly what's going on. So as you go throughout the day, as you go throughout this conversation, there are certain feelings that come up. And when feelings come up, it can cause a rise in anxiety. And when that rise in anxiety comes up, instead of attending to it like you needed your mom to do, you just push through, and you're powering through. And then you're not attending and saying, okay, all right, I'm feeling a little anxiety. I need to just check in, slow it down, and attend to myself. There's this pattern of self-neglect. If you think of yourself at that age, what do you think you needed? What do you think that kid needed? You know, when you said you were an emotional kid.
Just needed to be loved. Just wanted to be told I was good enough. And, you know, I just wanted affection and acceptance and unconditional love, you know. Something.
What do you
feel? Really,
what are you feeling right now as you talk about that?
Anxiety and sadness and.
Okay. Yeah. Oftentimes, anxiety is just a defense mechanism that kind of cocoons the feeling. See if you could focus on the sadness. I think what you're talking about right now is you're feeling sadness about the fact that you wanted this attention or you wanted this emotional validation or recognition and you didn't get it. It makes sense that you would be sad. And I think that maybe one of the things that you do now is because you were taught growing up that your emotions don't matter, right? So if you were sad or you were crying, instead of attending to your emotional needs and or comforting you or asking you what was wrong or letting you know that it was going to be okay, it sounds like your mom may have given you the message, these emotions aren't okay or you need to push through. So now when emotions come up, it seems like instead of attending to them, you'll just push through or elicit defense mechanisms to keep them at bay. Because I heard sadness in your voice when you were saying that, when you were talking about what that little kid wanted.
Yeah. I'm sad all the time. I'm just very happy, outgoing person, but I can cry pretty much daily watching TV or anything else. Just,
yeah.
I don't know. I just.
What's going on with your anxiety right now? What would you say is the level of anxiety you feel?
Probably a 6 or 7.
Okay, so it's still pretty high.
Yeah, I was doing better until I started thinking about my mom, talking about it here just in the last few seconds. It was definitely down when I was breathing more and checking in.
Mm-hmm. So it definitely sounds like talking about your mom brought up some emotions.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a little lower, honestly. It's probably more like a 4 or 5. I mean, it's.
Because one of the things I noticed is that you do sound a little slowed down. It doesn't sound like you're talking as quickly or abruptly as you were.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if one of the things that was happening is you were getting close to an emotion. You know, it seemed to me like I heard a certain degree of sadness in your voice when you were talking about what that little kid wanted. And I'm wondering if feelings of sadness, if you learned at an early age that sadness isn't acceptable, that unconsciously you mobilize anxiety to keep it at bay, to keep it from overwhelming you.
Yeah, I mean, that could be. It's, you know, it seems like I'm either fighting sadness or anxiety or anger, you know, kind of all the time. It's one of the three.
Yeah. It sounds like you're, it definitely sounds like you're suffering a lot.
Yeah,
So either
I worry.
you're feeling pain or anxiety or really struggling against an emotion, but that you're spending a lot of time just struggling.
Yeah, my brain's always running, so it causes anxiety, I think.
Yeah.
But I'm.
Does it bring up any emotion when you think about how much you've been suffering? Do you think about that?
I mean, it makes me sad and it makes me mad and it's.
Well, what are you feeling right now? I mean, I think you're telling me these emotions intellectually, but what do you feel right now when you think about what you've been going through? We've talked before, and you've told me just about it isn't just the pain, but the anxiety and the relentlessness of how quickly your mind goes and how your mind just goes to thought after thought and worry after worry to the point where it's very hard for you to feel safe.
I can never stop. Like, I just can't. Yeah. I'm never comfortable. I'm always worried about the next thing. Just been worrying since I was a freaking kid. I mean, I'm just constant worry, just all every day, every worrying when I go to school if I'm going to get beat up or a girl's going to like me or friends would think I'm popular, and if it was at home, it was if I was going to have to get in trouble or get yelled at or get hit or take care of my family or just things that a kid shouldn't have to take care of. And now as an adult, it's my relationship, it's my work, it's my career, it's my friends, it's where I live, what I drive, what I wear. I mean, it's just a never-ending cycle of, I don't know.
Just, well, it just sounds like it's incessant. It's unending.
It's not, yeah, there you go. It's unending. I don't sleep.
It actually brings up a feeling of sadness in me to hear you talk about that just because you're suffering so greatly. And I mean, when you think of this, when you were a kid and you were, you know, a bright kid and you had all this potential, and if you think of this kid who grew up and how much you've been suffering, I mean, do you have any feelings about your own suffering other than just from an intellectual perspective? But what do you feel about the fact that you've been going through this so nonstop and to the point where it may be hard for you to even see an end to it?
It's sad. I mean,
Do you feel sad right now?
I don't know. Honestly, I think I cry all the time. When I'm, especially when I talk about this stuff, and I feel like being honest, my anxiety, just to being on the call and whatever is like so high that it just is. I'm not even feeling that sadness. I'm not even letting it be able to come out. Like
right,
I worry,
right.
I worry so much about what other people think that I'm even worried about this call. You know, like it just.
So it definitely sounds like right now you're aware of, it's almost like you're watching yourself from a third-person perspective, like, how is this coming off? Am I making myself too vulnerable? Are people going to judge me?
Right.
That does sound exhausting.
It is. It's just been a long, long week and long day,
Was it a long day because you were anticipating this?
No, just work and
independent of that. Okay.
Yeah. So no, just I don't know.
John, would you say that this is it's very common for you to be very concerned about what other people are thinking and how other people are looking at you?
Yes, all day, every day.
Jeez. So that's another thing that it seems like it's you are just haunted by. You know, one of the things we were talking about earlier is the fact that you have a tendency to prioritize the words that you're saying over your own internal state. But what you're talking about now is you're even prioritizing other people's opinion or feelings of you over your own.
Yeah, I'm unfortunately, that's probably what's happening, and that's I do that. I mean, that's my whole life.
Can you
worrying about.
can you give me an example of prioritizing X, Y, or Z over your own internal state? I mean, it seems like right now what's going on is you're suffering. You're in like a 6 or 7 out of 10 anxiety, and one of the reasons is because there's this part of your mind that's saying what all these people think of you or how you're coming off is more important than you, is more important than feeling okay right now. That you're giving your own self the message, not consciously, but you're sub-communicating to yourself. You feeling okay isn't as important as these other people, you know, thinking you're smart or thinking you're articulate or thinking highly of you.
Thinking I'm taking too much time or thinking, you know.
Right. I mean, it's no wonder that your body is generating so many symptoms. It's almost like your own needs are at the end of the line. You know, these people that are just random faces across the country that you've never even met before, their opinion of you is actually getting more importance placed on it than you feeling okay right now.
Yeah,
I mean, I think your body is rebelling against the fact that you're not getting any sense of priority from your own self, right? So you could be driving to work and maybe you're running a little bit late and you're feeling anxiety. Am I going to get late? Are they going to be mad at me? Am I going to disappoint them? Is that something you've experienced?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm never late. I'm always early because I don't want to be late. And everything I've ever done, I mean, that's, I don't know.
It's almost like you're just avoiding other people looking at you negatively or being mad at you or doing everything that you want to be accepted, yeah. How do you feel about the fact that your own emotional state, your own equilibrium right now, that feeling okay in the moment is actually getting, having less importance placed on it than what these other people think of you? Do you have any emotion about that, or are you indifferent?
I mean, I'm kind of indifferent. I mean, it makes me mad, honestly, but...
Does it?
Yeah, it pisses me off.
Tell me about the anger. That's new. I haven't heard you say that before. What's the anger about?
That I just don't look after myself. I hate trying to be perfect, and I hate trying to, my whole life I've tried to, I work out, I eat perfect, I go to the right school, I get the right job, I get the right girlfriend, I volunteer, it's just never ending. The pressure on myself is so freaking hard, and it's just annoying that I'm on here and have this opportunity and to talk to you, and, you know, so worried about it that I can't even let loose, and you know, it pisses me off. That makes
and
me angry.
Who is this part of your mind that's telling you your feelings don't matter? Your feelings should take a back seat. Who's it mimicking?
My mom.
That's right. Your mom. And your mom taught you that your feelings, you feeling okay, is less important than being disruptive or, you know, her not being annoyed or overwhelmed. And right now, what's going on is there's this part of your mom or your part of your mind that is taking the form of your mom. And it's saying, essentially it's saying, John, you feeling okay right now is not important. What is important is that you sound smart and that you're taking the right amount of time to say things and that you're coming off well. How do you feel about this part of your mind that is mimicking your mom telling you that your feelings don't matter? Are you neutral about it?
No, I hate it. I freaking
tell
hate
tell
it.
Me about the anger you feel. It sounds like there's a lot of anger there about that.
You know, my heart's about to burst out of my chest right now, and the anxiety's turned up to about a 9. You know,
that's the anxiety. There's anger underneath the anxiety. See if you could allow yourself to feel this anger. This anger is legitimate. There's this part of your mind telling you you don't matter. There's this part of your mind telling you that you feeling okay doesn't mean shit and that pleasing all these other people is more important. And there's a lot of rage toward this voice. See if you can allow yourself, give yourself permission to feel that rage.
Just want it to stop.
Right.
Fucking
hate
That's
it. Right.
Fucking hate it. I want it to stop. I want to be able to live a normal life. And
good. See if you can allow yourself to feel this emotion in your body. You know what? I think that you have a tendency to deprioritize yourself, to tell yourself, this is more important than me, and this is more important than me, and this is more important than me. And you're walking around indifferent about the fact that your needs, your comfort is getting sent to the end of the line. That's the repression that Dr. Sarno talks about. You're walking around burying all this rage toward this mom in your head that's saying you don't matter. And what you just did for a brief instant was you got in touch with that rage and said, fuck off. Stop telling me I don't matter.
I'm just afraid if I'm like that, I'm going to freaking be a crazy loon, be angry all the time.
I know. That's the fear. That's the Incredible Hulk syndrome. If I allow myself to get in touch with the rage, I'm going to go around, you know, screaming at people or punching people out.
But my anxiety just went away.
You got it. All right. So what you did is, for a brief moment, you allowed yourself to get in touch with the feeling underneath, and you broke through that wall of anxiety. I think what you're doing all day, every day, is you're going around and you're giving yourself the message, or this part of your mind that's mimicking your mom. The mom in your head is giving you the message, you don't matter, you're not important, and you are just walking around bursting with rage that's getting stuffed down. And the rage is toward this voice that's saying, you don't matter. You're less important than getting to the office on time, than having other people like you, than sounding smart. Right?
Yes.
That anger is justified. It's legitimate. That's your ticket to freedom.
Yeah, I guess my mom is always angry, and so I just try not to be her, you know?
Yeah, I think one of the things that your mom taught you, you were really double-teamed. I mean, your mom not only taught you that your feelings or your emotions or your comfort doesn't matter, but she also taught you that anger isn't okay. And so the way to really empower yourself, to take that power back, is to get angry at that voice in your head saying you need to be perfect. Right? Like, well, we can start this call, and I might think in my mind, there's 20 people on the call. You need to sound smart. You need to sound articulate. And immediately I hear that voice, and I get angry at it. I think, how dare you? How dare you tell me that my comfort and my capacity to feel okay and happy in the moment is less important than sounding smart or being articulate or having other people think highly of me? And it's
okay.
Allowing yourself to feel that anger. That's what's going to allow you to eventually learn to prioritize yourself. When you hear that voice saying, you feeling okay, your comfort, your emotions, your ability to feel happy in the moment is less important than X, Y, and Z, and you stand up for yourself and you say no, right? Like, just like you're standing up to that mom in your head, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to stand for this.
Right.
And what happened when you allowed yourself to feel that rage?
Well, the anxiety is probably a 3, you know, or 2. I mean, it's
right.
I don't know. It felt good.
Can you see the relationship between your emotions and your symptoms?
Yes. Clearer than before, for sure.
Good. And can you see your relationship, the relationship between the way you treat yourself and these emotions?
Yes.
I mean, it's significant that when I asked you if you, you know, how you feel about the fact that you're deprioritizing yourself, you said, I'm kind of indifferent. It's bullshit. You weren't indifferent. You are angry about it because no one likes to, you know, be stuffed in the corner like they're not even there, like they don't even matter.
Right.
And what you were able to do was you were able to get in touch with the rage that you felt of being treated like a second-class citizen. When you get in touch with that, you empower yourself. This is essentially what self-esteem is, giving yourself the message that I matter, my needs matter.
Yeah, definitely felt good, and something that I don't allow myself to do, I know, very often.
Good. So when I talked to you just a couple of days ago in preparation for this call, and I was talking to you about the rage component, this is what I was talking about, right? Allowing yourself to actually feel the rage that the mom in your head or dad in your head or figure in your head from the past giving you the message that you don't matter, and you standing up and say, yes, I do, and to hell with you, and stop sending me to the end of the line. Right, so what
exactly.
Do you think you can do? How do you think you can take this going forward to help yourself feel better?
Well, I just think I need to feel that when my anxiety is going up, I think I can just check in with it, see why it's checking up, and then mm-hmm. figure out what the voice is telling me and who it's coming from, or, you know, and be okay to get pissed off at it, you know, and just... you know, realize that it's not me that's saying that, and it's a voice from the past, or the voice of someone else that's holding me down, and, you know, just, I think, show that anger and not show it, I mean, in the safety of my own home, but
mm-hmm.
feel it and recognize it, because when I stuff it down, I just get anxious and I go 100 miles an hour and it doesn't work.
Yeah, that's right. That's it. That's the way that you actually learn to become your own protector, your own defender, the parent that you never had. And you're reparenting yourself. And what you do is every time you hear that voice saying, you don't matter, you stand up and you say, yes, I do, get the hell out of here. How dare you tell me that my comfort is insignificant? And you become that, you know, protective older brother.
There'll be a lot of those conversations in a day, is that all right?
Yeah.
Like every 3 minutes, but
you're gonna have it a lot at first. But if you take that stance of self-love and self-protection, and my feelings do matter, eventually it becomes your default after a while.
Okay.
You know, I think that at first you were indifferent because you didn't recognize what you were doing to yourself. But as soon as you did. You care about yourself. You love yourself enough to want to stand up for yourself. It's just a matter of recognizing when you're sending yourself to the end of the line or the bottom of the totem pole. Asking yourself, how do I feel about that? How do I feel about this mom in my head telling me I don't matter? And then checking in with that feeling and allowing yourself to empower yourself. All right?
Sounds great.
Good. Do you feel like you know what to do going forward? Do you feel like this is a tool that you can utilize on your own?
Yeah, I think I've got a couple tools. I can make sure that I'm breathing and checking in when I get going.
Good. And you can listen to the recording of what we've talked about, and because it is being recorded, you could hear that in case you forget. And you know what's going to happen as you're listening to this recording, you're going to hear that mom in your head saying, oh, you didn't sound this enough or you didn't sound that enough, and that's just going to be another opportunity to stand up for yourself and say, hey, I have the capacity to feel okay right now. How dare you try to tell me that's more important than this, right?
Absolutely.
Good. All right. Well, thank you so much for calling up, John, and I really appreciate you making yourself as vulnerable as you did. I think it was a big help to a lot of people to hear someone do that.
Well, thank you. That wasn't planned on my end by any means, so it was definitely a surprise to me, but getting so I appreciate it. Appreciate what you do for the wiki and everything else.
Sure thing. Okay, well, good luck, and keep me updated, okay?
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye, John.
Bye.
Forrest.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. I just unmuted myself, and I got shivers. There were points where I wanted to cry. I mentioned that in the chat room, and a bunch of people said that they were crying too. So, but I think more to the point, I don't get to listen as much because I'm playing moderator, but I am really listening, looking forward to listening to that podcast. Thank you, John, for joining us, and thank you, Alan, for doing this great service. We're looking forward to putting this together into a program. So I think it's going to help an awful lot of people. Our next person is Mandy. Mandy, are you there? Hey, Mandy.
Yeah, I can hear you. Hi.
Yeah, sure can. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, Mandy.
Hi.
So do you feel, Mandy, like the subject matter of the last caller? I don't know if you had a chance to listen to it, but if you did, do you feel like that had any application to you?
Yeah, it did. I could relate to a lot of what he was saying. And a lot of symptoms as well. It seems
mm-hmm.
similar.
So we talked a little bit last week just as preparation for, or just for me to get a little bit of feedback from you about today. And how have you been since then?
Okay. I mean, it's a daily struggle here, but I don't know. My symptoms haven't gone down, but I haven't had any panic attacks or super, super high anxiety.
I'm sorry?
I haven't had panic attacks as usual, but
are panic attacks common for you?
Yes, yeah, or they have been in the past.
Could you maybe, Mandy, just go into like a little bit of like maybe a 1 minute history of your symptoms with anxiety, like the intensity or the history of it, how long you've been feeling like that for?
Well, I've been anxious my entire life. I had a very unstable childhood, alcoholic father, and mentally unstable mother. And I just thought it was normal. I just thought that everything, you know, being nervous all the time was what being human meant. I'd have a migraine, or my heart would race, and I would have anxiety attacks or panic attacks, but they would always go away, and I could always, you know, take deep breaths and calm myself down. And but I got pregnant a couple of years ago, and lost a couple of three of my cousins passed away within a short period of time, and I started having panic attacks, and all of a sudden, you know, I was about to have this baby girl, and somebody else I was going to be responsible for somebody else, and I just had this fear of abandoning her, and I started to have panic attacks constantly. I had a fear of dying during labor, and after I had her, I wasn't able to cry anymore or really get upset or have any emotions, because now I was a mom and I kind of had to just hold my breath and not get upset, not cry, not get angry, because I couldn't do that in front of this baby, because I didn't want to scare this baby.
It almost seems like you decided to go the opposite route that your
right.
parents went, because they expressed too many emotions and you thought, I'm going to protect my child by not expressing any.
Right, right. Like, I will smile through my pain all the time. You know, my babies don't know that I have chronic pain. They've never seen me get angry either. And I just... you know, I don't know what a healthy balance of that is. I don't want to walk around and be in pain all of the time, but I don't want my children to see
me. What are you feeling right now?
Not much. I mean, I
What I've been hearing is you're talking about a lot of really painful stuff. I have chronic pain. I'm not able to express emotions. You're talking about a difficult childhood, but I hear you almost as if you're telling me a story. You know, like it doesn't mm-hmm. seem like there's a lot of emotion linked to what you're saying. I'm just wondering if you're aware of feeling anything right now.
I know that I probably should be, but I know I push it down and hold my breath and try not to have a reaction because I have to hold it together. And I think I'm just in a chronic holding it together pattern probably.
I think you associate not expressing emotions with holding it together, like having
right.
feelings is synonymous with falling apart.
Right, right.
Your left brain, your intellectual brain, may know that expressing feelings doesn't mean necessarily that you're falling apart, but I think your right brain may see danger signs flashing everywhere.
Right.
I wanted to talk a
yeah.
little bit about fear. You had mentioned that you scared yourself a lot, and I was just wondering what were some of the things, and I think I started asking you this earlier, but what were some of the things that you scare yourself about these days? Like just this past week, what are some of the things you scared yourself about?
You know, now what scares me are my symptoms. I mean, in the past, I've been scared of a lot of things. But right now, it's just how I feel. And am I ever going to recover? Am I ever going to feel normal again? Am I ever going to be able to, you know, go for 5 minutes without thinking about my foot buzzing or tingling or my mm-hmm. feet going, you know, going to sleep? And it's just, I feel tortured.
It sounds like
you know,
you're riddled with fear.
Oh, I'm constantly. But at the same time, I still have doubt that these physical symptoms are fear-based. I still feel like there's something wrong with me that hasn't
well,
been uncovered
well,
yet.
That's part of the fear.
Right.
What are your symptoms the only thing that you scare yourself about, or do you scare yourself in other ways also?
Now, like, you know, within the last month, it's symptoms only. 35 days ago, it would have been, it could be my daughter having the flu or something wrong with one of them. I catastrophize and think that it's worse than it is. I've got other worries. I don't have necessarily fears, but I have other worries on my mind currently. But when it comes to, you know, large fears, it's, you know, how I feel constantly.
It almost sounds like you have an addiction to scaring yourself, that you're always going to find something to scare yourself with, so that it was maybe
right.
your daughter getting sick, and then it was, are my symptoms ever going to go away? And you know.
Yeah, it's definitely not something that I want to do, but I feel like if I prepare for it, if I think the worst, then maybe I can prevent something from happening or
well, it gives you the illusion of control. If I focus on
right.
worry, if I think about it, it's what people, if you feel internally out of control, this is oftentimes what superstition is. If there's a feeling of being internally out of control, it's like you try to control your external environment to feel less out of control because it's a painful feeling.
Right.
But one of the things I wanted to know is, given the fact that it sounds like dozens or maybe even hundreds of times every day you scare yourself, what do you do when you scare yourself? I mean, when this voice that seemingly comes from, you know, the abyss of your unconscious mind scares you and tells you your symptoms are never going to go away or your daughter's going to get the flu and something's going to happen to her, how do you respond then?
I mean, it usually goes on for a little bit before I can stop myself, but, you know, I try to think rationally. And sometimes the sometimes the rational part of my head is not very clear. I used to be able to do this. I don't know, you know, a couple of years ago I could rationally think through things. But I feel like now I can, it's like a runaway train sometimes, and I can't stop it, and I feel worse.
How old is your daughter?
I have a 28-month and a 4-month-old.
Okay. So let's say the 28-month-old in a few years experiences her first lightning or thunderstorm, and she's terrified. You know, she just read Chicken Little and thinks, oh, my God, the sky is literally falling. And she goes knocking on your door, and she is just in a state of panic. You know, mommy, mommy, you know, what's going on? What do you do? Well, what in your heart, in your gut, what do you do?
Well, we did this last week. She was scared of a storm. So.
Oh, wow. That's good timing.
Yeah. So we had a lightning storm, and she was scared. So we went outside, and we sat in the one-car garage and on our golf cart and just sat on the back of that, which is a place that she likes to be. It's a fun place for her. Mm-hmm. And we watched the lightning storm, and then, you know, she told me she was scared, and I told her what the lightning was and that it was going to make noise and that it was going to, the rain was going to fall and it was going to water the grass and the grass was going to grow and it was going to turn green and the yard would be pretty. And I walked her through, you know, logically what all those things were going to happen. So that she wouldn't
be scared.
Well,
it sounds like more than logic. It sounds like you actually provided emotional comfort for her.
Right, yeah, I guess so.
I mean, I honestly, when you were describing that, like, got a feeling of soothing that even came up in me. It wasn't like you just described to her the chemical reactions that were going on that lead to a lightning storm. You were actually providing comfort for her.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I do that. I do that constantly, and
constantly?
I constantly soothe them. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you could probably argue that I may go too far in terms of that. I have a hard time with temper tantrums and fits and crying. And
did you get soothed growing up or comforted when if your parents were fighting with each other and you were really scared, would you get have your emotions attended to and get soothed afterward?
No, I don't ever remember having ever being soothed. I really don't. I have very little emotional connection to my mother whatsoever.
Hmm.
My father.
It sounds like somehow you found a way to provide this really nurturing, maternal, soothing voice to give to your own children, but that you didn't get a feeling of being soothed very often yourself.
Right. Because I know what they did. I know they made mistakes. And I know that they didn't. I have a hard time understanding why two adults would do what they did to my sister and brothers and I.
It sounds to me like you're doing the same thing to yourself.
I guess so.
I mean, you're telling me that you are capable of this deep level of soothing and comfort. Whenever your daughters get scared, you will just smother them with love and comfort and soothing. Yet when I asked you, you know, how you would respond when this other part of your mind scared you, that there wasn't any hint of that. At first you piled it on, and then you maybe tried to have a logical, rational conversation with yourself. If you can go back in time to, can you imagine yourself? Do you know what you looked like when you were maybe 4 or 5 or 6 years old?
Yeah.
If you could think of yourself living in this house with these unstable parents that you didn't feel like you can trust or count on or were there to soothe you, and you can suddenly materialize in your adult form and you were to come across this little girl who was you when you were 6 years old, and she was really scared, what would you give to her that she didn't get, that she needed?
I mean, probably the same things that I do for my daughter. I think, I mean, I'd be mad at my parents.
I mean, I think that feeling anger toward the parents, like John, the last caller, did, is an important part of it. But I want to know what you would give yourself, your younger self, this part of you that was living in a state of fear and uncertainty and insecurity, and she was terrified. How would you treat her? What would you give her?
I don't want you just to give me words.
I want you to think about, actually imagine coming across this little girl and seeing her when she was 5 or 6 years old, feeling scared and uncertain. What would you do? What would you give her? What would you let her know?
I'd sit her in my lap and rock her and tell her that everything was going to be okay and that I didn't have to be scared. And
how would that have been for her to hear that and get that?
I think she could have felt safe for once. You know,
I'm going to tell you something. Back in the 1960s, they were doing these studies on epileptics, and they actually found that if they did an experiment where they would snip the corpus callosum, you know what that is? That's that bundle of wires that connects the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere. And they found that if they snipped that, if they cut it, that the seizures went away. So they started operating on all of these people with epilepsy. And a lot of them, the seizures went away. But then they actually found that they started having some strange symptoms, because the left brain, the left hemisphere, controls the right half of the body, and the right hemisphere controls the left half of the body. So what they found is these people's, their left and the right arms or hands and legs started acting independent from each other. Right? So this guy went to go light up his cigarette, and then his left hand knocked it out of his mouth. And totally unbeknownst to him, he had no control over it. There was a case of a man where one of his hands was actually trying to strangle his wife, and he had to restrain his own hand with his other hand. And so they started, House actually did an episode on it that was surprisingly accurate, but they're called split brain patients, and they started doing all of these studies on them. And they gave them these questionnaires. And the question might be, how traumatizing was that bully from when you were 8 years old that you told us about? And, you know, the right hand writes 1 out of 10. It was maybe 30 years ago. But their left hand, totally unbeknownst to them, writes down a 10 out of 10. And they don't even learn about the results themselves until afterward. So one of the things that they actually found from these tests and these experiments where the time doesn't exist in the right brain, that the right brain, this 5-year-old, the 6-year-old version of you, is still there. And that little girl that didn't get this soothing, that yearned for this comfort, this stability, is still there in your right brain.
Mm.
And that's who's getting scared. Right? The surface fear doesn't really matter. You're constantly scaring yourself, not on purpose. There's this, you know, the mom and dad in your head. There's a lot of different parts there. It's constantly scaring you, and this little girl is getting terrified. And oftentimes what happens is we become so used to feeling scared that it actually becomes familiar after a while. Right? So when you were young, you got scared so often that it actually became the norm. And believe it or not, the mind is actually more comfortable going to something familiar, even if it's painful, than to go to something unfamiliar. So I think that for you, a fight-or-flight state became the norm. And your mind is constantly going back to fear, fear, fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I'm in a dual state of fight-or-flight.
Yeah. Well, your mind learned that that was normal early on. You know, this is oftentimes why girls that are physically abused when they're really young might grow up to marry someone that physically abuses them, because they become so used to it, it becomes so familiar, it becomes almost mistaken with love so early in their life that they gravitate toward it. And so it is with fear. So you had these parents that would scare you all the time, and this fear state became so familiar that you actually became comfortable with it. It became the norm. So that now, later in life, your mind is constantly going to it, because even though it's painful, it's familiar. It actually reduces unconscious anxiety. So this is what's going on in you. You are constantly scaring yourself. Not on purpose, but because it was so familiar so early on that you will find anything to scare yourself with. These symptoms are never going to go away. Maybe I have this new disease that the doctors haven't been able to find. My daughter's going to get sick and something's going to happen to her. Right? I'm going to be late to this meeting. I'm going to call up for this TMS webinar and I'm not going to know what to say. I mean, your mind is just going to find any reason possible to scare you.
Yeah, I feel like if I'm not fixating on something to worry about, then I don't know what else to put up there.
Yeah.
Like there's always noise in my head that's constant worry. If it's not one thing, it's another.
So what you need is the same thing that little girl needs. When you hear that voice scaring you, what she needs is to be comforted, just like your girls need and just like you needed when you were 5 or 6 years old. That little girl is still in there, and you're going to scare yourself. You're going to wake up tomorrow and you're going to scare yourself 100 times. And I want you to think about that little girl that you described, who was 5 or 6, who so desperately needed to be taken into someone's arms and told, you're safe, it's okay, I'm here for you, you're not alone, it's going to be okay. And I want you to think about her tomorrow when you wake up and, you know, maybe you're going to have this fear like, oh, this thing that Alan told me isn't going to work, right? There's
right.
Just a fear. And there's that little girl getting scared. And you have the opportunity to either neglect her fear like your parents did, or give to her what you would do if you could go back in time. Given the fact that time doesn't exist in the right brain, you actually can.
So I've heard several, I've heard many different times that anxiety is worse, can be worse on the left side of the body. And is that the right brain? Is that why?
I don't
right
know.
Brain?
I've actually never heard that before, but
okay.
Maybe.
Interesting. Okay.
But, I mean, you feel unsafe all of the time. And the anger that we had talked about previously is a really important component of it, but feeling safe is important too. You don't feel safe in the world. Everywhere you look, it's a threat. You know, your
right.
daughter is a threat. Because I don't want to screw her up by, you know, having these emotions. Your pain is a threat. Your emotions are a threat. Everything is a threat. What you need is what that little girl needed, is to just go back in time and let her know, you're safe. I'm here for you. Every time you scare yourself and she doesn't get attended to, right, and she doesn't hear the message, you're safe, you're going to be okay, it's like just a re-traumatization of that fear pattern that happened when you were a kid. But if you can start soothing yourself, I mean, the good news is I've worked with people and I really actually had to teach them what nurturing looked like. They had no idea. It would take 6 months even just to get them to experience what that felt like. You're ahead of the curve. You already know how to do that. You do it with your daughters. You even did it in that, you know, fantasy that we talked about, if you can go back in time. It's just a matter of giving yourself that. Imagine that little girl in your right brain, 6 years old, desperate for comfort, desperate for soothing. You know, put your hand on your chest, like we talked about. It gives you a feeling of being hugged, and let yourself know, let her know, you're safe, it's going to be okay. I'm here for you. And give her that comfort that she's been yearning for so many years. And you do that. You do a few hundred, a few thousand repetitions. You will actively change your neural connections. You will no longer, it's like reparenting yourself. And that's one of the things that you're missing.
Right.
You just don't feel safe.
Right. No, I never do.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you may have gone to therapy, you've read all these books, but how's that going to help you when you feel terrified every minute of every day?
Yeah, that's what I've been struggling with, because I can't figure out, I haven't been able to figure out why I do this, or why I'm always anxious, or why I'm scared of my own shadow.
Yeah. Listen, you were taught when you were young that the world isn't safe. But you have
right.
a healthy brain hemisphere right now. You've developed that against all odds. And you need to use that and let yourself know, let your right brain know, let that little girl inside of you know. You are safe. I'm here for you. It's going to be okay. And see if you can bring yourself down and help yourself feel soothed and comforted in that way. The fears are going to seem real. You know, but it's really just kind of a means to an end. It's your mind very cleverly bringing you to a place of fear, using a thought. The thoughts are never real. It's just a means to an end. It's like your mind wants to bring you to a fight or flight place because that feels familiar, but it can't do it alone, so it needs to eject a thought into your mind. So maybe the thought is, your pain's never going to go away.
Right.
Maybe the thought, you know, I was maybe about 5 years ago or something, me and Howard Schubiner, who's a TMS physician, were going to be doing a radio interview together with Jeanette Barber. And I'd never done a radio interview before, and this was maybe going to be used to treat other TMS practitioners. So, you know, in my mind, it was kind of like a psychological threat. So my mind started injecting all of these fears into me. The first was like, oh, what if you get laryngitis? Doesn't make any sense at all. And then the next fear was like, oh, he's in Michigan, you're in Los Angeles. You know, what if you guys talk over each other? And I didn't really buy into that. And then the next fear was, did you pay rent this month? Like, it wasn't even related, you know. And then the next one was like, did you remember to shut off the oven? You know, our minds, when it feels a threat, is just trying to bring us to this fight or flight state, and it will use any thought possible, anything that it thinks could hook us in. Now, I didn't buy into any of these fears, and I spent that time just letting that little kid in my right brain know, you're safe, it's okay, I'm here for you. I didn't buy into any of these surface fears. I just kept soothing myself, and by the time the interview came around, I was pretty zen. And these fears are going to seem very real to you.
Okay.
You're going to have you can start to catalog them. This,
yeah.
There really is something physically wrong with me. Something's going to happen to my daughter. You know, I'm not going to be able to financially support myself if the pain gets worse. There's probably going to be, you know, 100 of them, but none of the fears are real. One of your goals is to rip the mask off of these fears and see it for what it is. This is your mind's way of trying to bring you to a fight or flight state. And what you need more than anything is to be comforted, to be soothed. You're going to be okay. It's going to be all right. I'm here for you.
That makes a lot of sense. Like I have this monkey mind that, you know, several times a minute I have a scary negative thought. And, you know, I've read through a lot of the TMS things, and I haven't been able to figure out because I was searching for repressed rage, and I couldn't figure out what I was angry or what I was repressing, because I'm angry. I'm angry at my parents, and I feel like I'm feeling all of those things, but nothing seems to subside. But I feel anxious. I feel like that's something I know that I need, that I know I never got comforted.
You know, you have such a soothing, comforting voice. You really do, and I imagine that you're doing a really good job of, like, soothing and comforting your daughters. See, you even talk out loud to yourself. Your daughters are too young to think you're crazy anyway. You know, talk out loud to yourself and let yourself know you're safe. I'm here for you. I know you're scared right now. I know this fear seems very real, but I know what this is. This is just it's like an aftershock. It's the collateral damage of growing up in a world where I didn't feel safe. And even though it feels like this fear is real, instead of piling on, I'm going to soothe myself or comfort myself and let myself know it's going to be okay. I'm here for you this time around.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Do you think that's something you can do?
Yeah, I think my daughter looks a lot like me, so I can picture her, and I feel like I should just treat my whole 33 years before now as just PTSD and try to recover from a very scary experience and stop scaring myself.
It is PTSD. It is.
Yeah.
And you nailed it. You know, if you stop scaring yourself, you can heal that. Because your right brain doesn't know that you're not 6 years old and that the world is safe now. If you ever talk to a Holocaust survivor, oftentimes it's really similar. Even though it's 50 years later, you know, they're still sleeping with one eye open because the right brain doesn't know you're safe now. So what our goal is to help your right brain learn you are safe now. Your mind is peppering you with 100 fears every day, and each one of those is an opportunity to soothe yourself. Every one of those is an opportunity to let yourself know you're safe now.
Yeah, I think that I've minimized a lot of scary things that happened and just assumed, well, that shouldn't be. That shouldn't be causing all these problems now. I mean, lots of people go through scary things, but I guess for a six, like looking back now, those are scary, but I guess I think that I should have been able to handle it, but I wouldn't have asked my two-year-old to handle those things. Or I wouldn't have expected her to not be scared in those situations.
You know, that was actually just a very comforting stance that you just took right there by saying, hey, you know, instead of saying get over it or it doesn't matter, I'm telling myself that was difficult and it was hard and it is okay. Can you put your hand on your chest right now as we're talking?
Okay.
And see if you can just take a couple breaths and I know the term inner child sounds kind of new agey, but like I talked about earlier, this really is this little girl that's figuratively living in your right brain. And she's scared because every scary thing that happened to her is, you know, she doesn't know that the world is safe right now. And let her know right now, you know, out loud or to yourself, whatever you're most comfortable with, just let her know you're safe now. I'm here for you. I'm going to take care of you, and it's going to be okay, just like you would have done if you could go back in time, and you're doing it right now. And just take a moment or two and give yourself that message. Instead of scaring yourself for once, you're doing the opposite. You're letting yourself know you're safe now. I'm here for you, and it's going to be okay. How does it feel to give yourself that message?
It feels foreign.
It feels foreign, yeah.
Yeah, it's not something I'm used to.
Yeah.
I'm doing it for my babies, but not for myself.
That's right. That's great. I mean, it should feel foreign at first. What you're doing is you're creating new tracks. I think of it as like, you know, if there's a car driving along and there's a snowbank and the car goes over the snowbank and makes tracks. And then the next car comes along and goes over those same tracks. And the next 1,000 cars all go over those same tracks. They're the only tracks that are laid. So when the next car comes, that's where they're going to, you know, naturally go. What we're trying to do is create new tracks. Instead of going over those same tracks of scaring yourself and then just buying into that fear and spinning in that fear state, you're creating new tracks and you're letting yourself know it is safe and you're safe and I'm going to take care of you. And the more you do that, the deeper the tracks get. And you are actually, literally altering your neural connections. And it's like going back in time and reparenting yourself and building a world where you are safe now.
Okay. I will do that.
Okay. Good.
And
what all it takes is recognition, discipline, and then repetition. And that's it. And when you're able to do that over and over and let yourself know, let that little girl in your right brain know you're safe over and over, you will change your brain to the same brain that someone who actually grew up in a safe environment had. You will have effectively reparented yourself. Okay?
It's nice to think there's hope.
Yeah. I mean, doesn't it feel so good right now to feel taken care of and protected and optimistic? It is foreign for you, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I know it. I've just created a really bad habit, I guess, just trying to daring myself to protect myself.
Well, that bad habit was created for you. You didn't have a say in it.
Right.
You just took the baton and it's all you knew, but you know more now.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, there's other components like what I talked about with the previous caller about actually getting in touch with the anger that you feel toward this mom or dad in your head that's trying to scare you. But that isn't enough. It isn't just about standing up for yourself, right? Like if your daughter were getting bullied in school, you would head right down to that schoolyard and you would, you know, get in this bully's face and say, if you touch my kid again, I'm going to come back down here and beat you up myself. But you're also going to go home and you're going to hug your daughter and you're going to let her know it's okay, you're safe. And so both parts are important. You want to stand up to that voice that's abusing you or neglecting you, but you also want to learn to be your own nurturing parent and soothe that part of you and let that part of you know, hey, it's going to be okay, you're safe now, I'm here for you.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're going to have plenty of opportunities because you're going to get off the phone right now and within 15 minutes it's going to start again and it's going to say, oh, this works for other people but it's not going to work for you. Hey, that's just another fear right there. It's okay. I'm here for you. You're okay. You see that? It's going to be clever.
Yeah.
It's going to come up with fears that are so outside the box that it really seems real, but your job is just to recognize, hey, this is just another fear, but I'm here to let you know you're safe now and I'm going to take care of you. You become your own parent. You have 3 kids now. You have your 4-month-old, your 28-month-old, and your 33-year-old.
Okay.
That's you, if it wasn't clear.
Yeah.
But
or my husband.
You know, right, exactly. 4 kids, maybe. So, you know, see if you could implement this and actually start creating new behavioral patterns. And see if in a few weeks or in a month you don't have yourself actually feeling safe, or have that little girl in your brain actually feeling like, you know, she has a mom. Not a drill sergeant, not a terrorist, not a dictator, but a nurturing mother.
Right. Okay.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling up and sharing all of that with us.
Thank you. I appreciate the time and opportunity.
All right,
I'll come back in a month with my success story.
That's good. Yeah, keep us updated.
Okay.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's very interesting. Thank you, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of talk in the chat room about the timelessness and what it means for the right brain to not have a sense of time. Is that like the id not having a sense of time, or maybe the limbic system not having a sense of time?
Exactly. And, you know, sometimes I'll be working with people and they'll say, oh, the past is the past. I mean, a lot of therapists really will go back to the past and say, what was that like for you? But in my experience, there isn't really enough emphasis on the way that the past is still playing out on a minute-to-minute basis, even in the present.
Yeah, that's something that I love. Occasionally, I was just recently in an email to someone, I quoted on your website when you're describing psychodynamic therapy and how it works. How you describe the connection between the past and the present. And I think that's
right.
That's very helpful, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that cognitive behavioral therapy actually could be effective in isolation. I mean, I think there's different paths to the same outcome. And oftentimes learning, like with Mandy, we were talking about the fact that her parents scared her. And
mm-hmm.
that could be important to know, when, you know, where she learned to scare herself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not enough. You know, you need to hear that and change the way you treat yourself. Instead of scare yourself, instead of being a fearmonger, learn to be your own parent. So a lot of people that I work with are like, I don't know why I'm not getting better. Well, how do you treat yourself on a minute-to-minute basis? Do you scare yourself? Are you a good parent to yourself? Or are you, a drill sergeant or a dictator or I can't think of any more synonyms.
Yeah.
But
Bully.
So yeah, that, so that's a really important component of healing.
Yeah. In terms of the forum,
what's that?
I was just going to say that on the forum, a lot of people, when they do the journaling, they try to go just into the past. But what I'm hearing from this, and what I hear from other sources as well, is just it's important to tie it into the present, to look at how you're thinking on a day to day basis. Just another
exactly.
angle of looking at it.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, it's 10:32 or 7:32 over on the left coast. What next?
Do we still have Lane on the line?
We do. Yes, we do indeed. Shall I unmute her?
Yes.
All right. But we could just talk about her and leave her muted. Okay. Hey, Lane, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, welcome.
Did you call her Laney Forrest?
I didn't mean to. I might have.
Oh, maybe you didn't. I thought you just gave her a new nickname.
Oh.
I thought it was.
That's
all
right.
Cute.
My grandma called me Lainey.
Aww.
I'm empathic.
I think I'm going to call you Lainey for the duration of
okay.
the call.
Okay.
So thank you for waiting patiently.
Of course. I've been I haven't been able to stop moving, but
What has been going on with you as you've been listening? Have you been, like, taking some of this stuff in, or have you been so focused on, like, oh, what am I going to talk about? Is there going to be time for me has it been harder for you?
Pretty much worrying about what I was going to say, to be honest. Yeah.
Okay.
I've listened a little bit, not super in-depth. Like, I want to go back in. I took some notes, but I want to go back in and listen to it a second time.
Okay. Well, where are you at right now? Just kind of like, how are you feeling? What do you feel like is something that just in the context of what we're talking about or where you're at right now that is something that is you feel like is important for you to address?
Well, I kind of feel like the first caller could have been me, to be honest. Like, I mean, give him a girl voice, and it could have been me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I had a lot of stuff in common with him.
Mm-hmm.
So,
just in terms of how you feel on, like, a daily basis or your upbringing?
My, like, experiences on a daily basis.
Okay. What are your experiences on a daily basis?
The, like, watching himself from a third-person perspective, that resonated really, really deeply.
Mm-hmm.
I'm constantly thinking about how other people are seeing me. I'm super concerned with my looks. Like, I do my makeup and my hair every day, you know. Also, like, I'm just constantly aware of how I'm appearing to other people.
How about right now?
Well, no, because I'm alone.
Well, I know that, but you, there's people on the line.
Oh, yeah, I worry about, my biggest worry is sounding intelligent or, you know, seeming competent.
So it really sounds like there's a huge emphasis on either your accomplishments or how other people see you.
Oh, yeah.
But
I've always been, I'm sorry.
Go on.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that I've always been, like, the smart one or the pretty one, you know? Like, my mom is always showing us off.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like making us, you know, responsible, like taking responsibility or taking, like, ownership of our own accomplishments. So, like, this is my daughter, and she has her master's, and you know what I mean? Like, look at how beautiful she is. And so I think that that kind of made me hyper aware of how other people are seeing me.
Yeah, so there was more of an emphasis on what you brought to the table than you, like, as an individual.
Yeah.
And so other people's opinions of you have become really important, and it seems like your own opinion of yourself hasn't really come to matter that much.
Totally, yeah.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you're very aware of what's going on a logical level.
Oh, yeah, intellectually I understand quite a bit, absolutely.
So what's the problem?
I guess my timeless right brain doesn't get it. You know?
Yeah. So you understand that, well, what are your symptoms? We talked earlier in the week, and I remember you telling me that you had fatigue, and there was, like, a history of anxiety. Is there anything else?
I've had IBS since I was, like, 16.
Okay.
So that was the first symptom. For sure.
Okay. So you've had IBS, currently you have fatigue?
Yeah, pretty severe fatigue. Well, not severe. I don't know. It's not that bad, but I have some fatigue, insomnia, which obviously can kind of tie in with the fatigue, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
What do you feel like your self-esteem is? Or how do you feel like your self-esteem is?
It's frail. I feel sometimes if I'm doing everything right, if I'm, you know, doing well in things that I care about, then I feel pretty good. But the moment
that's not self-esteem. That's, again, just judging yourself based on your accomplishments.
Okay.
Self-esteem is really just about how you feel about your own self, independent of, you know, like, what you see when you look in the mirror, independent of, you know, your GPA or how great of a job you just did, but just the idea, the concept of feeling okay about yourself just for being you, feeling a sense of self-worth or feeling a sense of self-love.
I don't really feel like I exist outside of those things.
Wow. Well, I'm not surprised you have symptoms. It almost seems like, you know, we all have this part of us that yearns to just feel okay the way we are.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't feel okay the way we are, we have a tendency to try to compensate for that by doing well. You know, I think Kobe Bryant is a great example. Or Michael Jordan. You know, if I remember reading Michael Jordan's biography, and it's like, he got a 94% on his test, and his mom was like, where are the other 6 points? So
right.
What happens? Inherently, he feels not good enough the way he is, and
right.
he becomes absolutely obsessed, possessed when it comes to winning. He needs to win because it's the only thing that could give him that sense of worth, you know, to the point where actually when he plays other sports like golf or pool, he actually cheats. He needs to win that badly because it's
yeah.
the only thing that can make him feel okay about himself.
For sure.
So
I can relate.
You can relate.
Mm-hmm.
How does that sound to you when you actually hear that, like, described objectively? I mean, does it sound like positive? Does it sound like something that you're, you know, drawn to? Does it sound repugnant?
No, it sounds like something I'm drawn to.
It does. Okay.
Like,
so
yeah.
This is actually something that I've come across a lot. It's that, like, for you, external validation is like a drug.
Absolutely.
You love it. You want to go in situations where, you know, like, guys are going to find you attractive, or you're going to be able to achieve or accomplish something, because that's what makes you feel good about yourself.
Right.
So what message do you think?
I hate admitting that, but yeah.
No, I think that shows a lot of insight. I mean, sometimes I'll have to work with someone for a couple of months just to help them see that. So I think that's great. What do you think that subcommunicates to yourself?
Just that my view of myself doesn't matter as much as anyone else's.
Yeah. And that there isn't a lot of self. It's almost like you, to some degree, you have like, you know, an addiction, like a heroin addiction or something. It feels really good in the moment, but it fades and
yeah.
fast. And then you need it again.
Yeah.
Well, is it worth it?
Well, from where I stand now, right this very second, yes.
Why?
Because it feels so good in that moment.
Your body's rebelling, though.
It totally is.
Your body is rebelling. It doesn't like feeling totally devoid of any self-love and needing to, like, fill up, like, a gas station.
Yeah.
If you can flip a switch and all of a sudden get that feeling of self-love and not need this external validation as much, would you?
Absolutely.
You would?
Yes.
Why?
Because I don't like having to rely on outside sources for my sense of worth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would just be nice to be able to feel that myself rather than relying on unstable sources outside, you know? Like.
Okay. I mean, I hear you. Do you believe what you're saying right now?
I don't know, dude. like
it
I said, intellectually,
like
I get it, but right?
Yes.
I want to get it. Like, I want to feel that. I want to, but
you're gonna have a lot of opportunities this week. This is almost like it's like you're in the Matrix right now. You know, you feel like right now your standard for feeling good is coming from external things. And for you, it's like getting some sort of feedback that is wonderful was everything, and, you know, you're going to gravitate toward that. Whereas in reality, that's soul-destroying. I mean, we live in a culture that emphasizes, you know, external validation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a capitalistic society. Even at college graduation speeches, you know, they all center on, it doesn't matter where you came from, you can always be successful. You don't ever hear any, you know, college graduation speeches where they say it doesn't matter whether or not you're successful, you have the capacity for happiness.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're caught in this zone right now. You are caught in this world where the message is you need external validation, and what you think of yourself doesn't matter.
Right.
And so this is actually going to require a real conscious, disciplined shift in you. So I had a lot of symptoms at one time. And I loved external validation myself, you know, like getting good grades, having good jobs. I mean, it's so intoxicating.
Mm-hmm.
But at a certain point, I just realized, you know what, it's like you're living your life always waiting for the next fix and never really truly feeling safe. Because you know as soon as it goes away, you're going to feel empty again.
Yeah.
And it actually requires reaching a certain point where you just say to yourself, fuck it, I'm done. I'm done living like that. And making an active choice to see that validation there and actually choose health over that drug.
I'm experiencing some fear.
What's the fear right now?
I've just never done any differently.
I know. It will be a huge loss. You will go through a period of grief because right now your identity is so tied up in this system of external rewards. And it actually, talking about the Matrix, it's just like what Keanu Reeves went through, and he found out that the world he thought he was living in actually wasn't the real world.
Right. I don't know that I know how to do it.
All right, give me an example of something this week that has the capacity to give you external validation.
Well, I think I get it all day, every day at work because I'm a server.
Uh-huh.
And so if I'm charismatic or dressed a certain way because I work at like a hip place, you know,
uh-huh.
I'm just constantly being told how pretty I am and how much people love my eyes. And, you know, so I get it all day.
So what's this voice in your head tell you when you do get it?
That I matter, that I'm being seen.
Okay. It's like, good job.
Yeah.
It's like, sweet.
Yeah.
That's like the moment of truth. That is where you have the opportunity to either indulge in it and sink deeper or take a stand.
Okay.
What do you mean, okay?
I guess I just don't really know what that means, take a stand. I mean, like, just
how do,
don't.
How do you feel about the fact that there's this part of your mind, this mom in your mind, based on what you told me, who's telling you that you're only okay if, you know, this other person says you're okay. You're only good if this other person says you're good. You're only worthy if this other person makes you feel worthy. Do you have any feelings about that? You don't have to.
Yeah.
I don't want you to tell me you have feelings about it if you don't.
Like a little twinge of sadness, but nothing intense.
What's the sadness about?
I almost feel ashamed. Yeah, I feel ashamed of it.
That's like, not sadness. That's more self-abuse.
Okay.
How do you feel about that little girl who got this message from her mom over and over that, you know, she was worth something because she did something well?
I don't know. I guess I kind of feel like that was how she showed her love for me. You know, like she didn't know how to support
me
any other way.
No, I didn't ask you to, you know, explain why she did that. I'm asking, how did it feel when you think about that little girl being given that message to the point where she actually has symptoms today because of it? To the point where it's hard for her to, you know, exist in a state of joy or happiness outside of getting this positive feedback or external validation.
Yeah, I'm just pretty sad.
Are you?
Yeah.
Whoa, what do you wish that that girl would have been told?
I don't even know. I don't know what would be appropriate, you know?
Mm-hmm. What if she were told, you know, you're okay. If you get a master's degree, if you have very pretty eyes, if you do really well in this tournament, that's great. But if you don't, you're okay too. That you're loved just for being you. That you're loved just for being my daughter. That I love you just because you're human, just because you're you. Not because of all these things that you're good at or great at. How would it feel to hear something like that?
Different.
Is there a feeling that you feel right now? An emotion?
Sort of uplifting. I don't know what emotion that would be.
Is there any sadness that you feel? I wasn't sure if I was hearing sadness in your voice.
The sadness in my voice is just kind of carrying over from before. But as far as hearing what you suggested, like that it feels different but right on a certain level. You know what I mean?
It does.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's what all kids are supposed to hear. But most of them are.
Okay.
You know, like what that little girl wanted was just to feel okay the way she was. Just to feel good enough the way she was. Just to feel loved just for being her. But somewhere along the line, there were these distorted messages that you get a feeling of praise when you bring home a good test. And you see your mom's eyes light up when her friends tell her how pretty her daughter is.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, you get the message, this is what I want. This is what I'm yearning for. I'm yearning for that love. And so I'm going to do great things to get that love. And now it's the same thing with your own self. I'm going to do great things. I'm going to be great in order to get that feeling of love.
Yeah.
Is there an emotion you have right now when we're talking about this, or is it purely just left-brained?
It's feeling pretty flat, like pretty.
It's feeling flat, like it's an intellectual thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. This right here is your challenge. Like one of the things that I've found is oftentimes needing to actually connect with the emotion associated with the fact that you're doing this is a really important component in changing it. If you feel sadness for that part of you that doesn't feel good enough, if you feel anger toward, you know, the mom or dad in your head that tells you you're not good enough the way you are, that's where the motivation to actually change that behavior comes from. But when it's just an intellectual exercise, then the interventions don't really carry that much weight. I think you have the capacity, you have the potential to feel feelings about this. I just think that, you know, you're not right now.
Yeah. I have a really hard time opening up, period, but opening up to someone I've never spoken to before, well, I mean once, but that's even harder.
Yeah, so there's like a vulnerability thing.
Absolutely.
Do you find it hard to make yourself vulnerable right now as we're talking about this?
Yeah, kind of. And then it's frustrating, and I get mad about it because I feel like this is a really cool opportunity.
Whoa. I mean, it makes sense to me that you would have a hard time making yourself vulnerable right now. You know, even the way that you just treated yourself, it was like you're having a hard time making yourself vulnerable because there's other people listening on the call because you've never talked to me before. And so you have this reaction. I have a hard time making myself vulnerable. Look at the way you respond to that. It's like you beat yourself up because of that. You say, "What's wrong with you? You're wasting an opportunity," instead of, you know, being understanding and forgiving the fact that your guard is up right now.
I don't want it to be.
I know, but it is. It's okay. Listen, Lane, it's about the way that you treat yourself. What we're talking about really when it comes down to it is unconditional love. Having a stance toward yourself of unconditional love. I don't think you got that growing up. Feeling loved unconditionally just for being you. So right now in the moment, and I'm really glad you brought that up because I think it's important, it's hard for you to make yourself vulnerable right now. So look at the way you come at yourself. You say, "What's wrong with you? This is an opportunity. You're wasting it. You know, you're okay if you can put your guard down. You're not if you don't." That isn't nice. That's not treating yourself with unconditional love. Taking a stance of, "Hey, listen, it makes sense that it would be hard for you to put your guard down right now, given the circumstances. And that's okay. And you're okay." Do you hear the difference in those two takes?
Yeah.
Does it sound like it would be nice if you were treated like that throughout the day? Knowing
I feel
that.
like I wouldn't ever get anything done.
What do you mean?
Well, I kind of feel like cracking the whip is how you get stuff done, you know?
On
That's
your own
how,
self?
yeah.
Do you know what else it leads to?
To
Fatigue.
right.
You know, I've worked with a lot of people who have a fear that if they didn't put this incessant pressure on themselves, they wouldn't get anything done. But usually what they find is that pressure, more than anything, is a motivation killer, and that ambition free from this tyrant dictator-like pressure is actually a lot freer and more joyful. You have a hard time making yourself vulnerable right now because you've never talked to me on the phone before. There's maybe other people listening to what you're saying. And that's okay. That's fine. You're still okay. I wouldn't even say it's a mistake that needs to be forgiven. It's just a natural reaction to being in a new situation. And I imagine that if that's the stance you took toward yourself, one of acceptance, one of forgiveness, one of love, you wouldn't need these symptoms. You wouldn't feel so tired all the time. You wouldn't feel anxious because you'd be okay. It sounds tiring being that hard on yourself all the time.
Yeah.
Sounds exhausting.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like you're getting a lot of love from your own self.
I've been trying, I've been working on it, but
Good.
yeah, I'm not exactly where I want to be. Yet.
Good, good. And that's okay. But that's the goal, is it's not just about you know, getting angry at this mom or dad in your head, or even just soothing yourself, but really genuinely looking at yourself from a stance of unconditional love, through a lens of love and care and compassion. And when you have that stance, when you actually feel a sense of love for yourself, then all that other stuff follows, because, you know, you're not going to treat someone terribly if you have a feeling of love toward them. Being able to see yourself, you, not your looks or your accomplishments, but just you, just Lane, through loving eyes. That you're just okay because you're you. And you may not have been given, you know, a big push in that direction, because growing up it sounds like a lot of the love you received may have been conditional. Not that, you know, your parents had any malintent. It was probably just an offshoot of the way that they were raised. But you have the opportunity to work toward giving yourself that now, and even just starting by hearing that you can't make yourself vulnerable and telling yourself that's okay. You're doing the best you can, kiddo. How are you feeling right now? Are you still flat?
Yeah, kind of. I keep having these critical thoughts, like, I thought I was going to come on here and I was just going to open up, and you were just going to dig it out of me, and I was just going to be all better, you know what I mean? And I was just going to be fabulous, and I was going to help so many people, and...
Oh, God, look at these expectations and this pressure.
Right?
No wonder you're feeling so exhausted. I mean, talk about conditional love. It's like you're giving yourself the message, you're okay if you do it this way, and you're spectacular, and you're great, and, you know, you help all these people, and you get so much out of it, and you're not okay if you don't. That's not nice. I mean, that's not loving, you know? I mean, telling yourself, it's like if I told myself, Alan, if you come on this line and you dig all this stuff out of Lane, then you're okay, and if you don't, then you're not okay. I mean, that's conditional love.
Yeah.
You know, but letting yourself know you're okay, regardless of how it goes, just because you're you, that's when, you know, your body's at rest, when you actually feel peaceful, when you feel free. So when you hear these voices telling you, you know, you're only good enough if you do something great, you have the opportunity to hear that and say, fuck you, and stand up for yourself, and how dare you try to outsource my self-worth like that, I'm okay. And really work to give yourself that message that I'm okay just for being me. You know, and then give yourself some credit. Tell yourself you're proud of yourself. I'm proud of you for standing up for me. You know, look in the mirror. Look in your eyes. The eyes don't change. You have the same eyes that you did when you were a little kid. Actually see the humanity in your eyes and give yourself that message that I'm going to start taking care of you. I'm going to come from a stance of love. All you need is love. Love is all you need. I've been waiting 20 minutes.
Oh my gosh, those stinking beetles, man.
But can you hear, just in the context of what you were doing to yourself, just in this call alone, how hard you are being on yourself?
Yeah, but I still don't see the wrongness of it. You know what I mean?
I know. It feels so familiar, but you're like a pageant. You're like a pageant mom to yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you look beautiful. You win first prize. You're good enough. If you don't, you're not. And I was like you. I had symptoms similarly. Because I drove myself. I would put so much pressure on myself. I would, you know, I was only okay if I would you know, I used to, before my days as a psychotherapist, I used to be like a comedy songwriter and performer.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, you know, my friend and I would go around to different colleges. They'd fly us out. We would sing. And I never ever enjoyed it because every single time there was like one song that could have gone better. There was one thing that could have been different. And you can spend your whole life living like that. You know, but it is exhausting. And it just comes to a point where, you know, you take a stance and you say, I could keep on doing that, and I know what that gets me. But if you keep on doing what you've always done, you're going to keep on getting what you've always got. And I think you're capable of having a lot more happiness and fulfillment than you do right now.
That for sure.
And it's going to take time. It's going to take time. You know, it may just be words at first. But
yeah.
if you give yourself the message, I'm going to work toward taking care of you. I'm going to work toward having a loving, unconditional relationship with you, independent of what you do, then you're changing your stance. And you're eventually breaking that addiction. I teach at USC, and I used to really care about like what my professor evaluations were. And then I remember one time, a number of years ago, I got this email, and it was the professor evaluations for the semester. And there was this fear of, oh my God, what did I get? And then I heard this other voice, and I was just like, to hell with you. I'm not going to value these professor evaluations over the capacity to determine my own level of self-worth. Right? It's like a battle where you're actually taking the power back. I'm going to determine how I feel. I'm going to determine how I feel. I'm not going to put it in the hands of this other thing. And when you do that and you take that stance, and it may not take right away, you know, but if you continually reinforce, I determine how I feel, I'm certainly not going to prioritize, you know, what this person thinks of me, what this employee thinks of me, what that student thinks of me, you know, what this boss thinks of me over me. You're really standing up for yourself, and you're taking a stand. It won't change immediately, but you're changing the lens through which you see yourself.
See, that makes me feel so super pumped. Like, I know that that's what needs to happen. It just sounds so weird.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just weird.
Yeah. Well, it's foreign as hell because it's almost like you've been a heroin addict for 20 years and I'm like, you know, put the heroin pipe down and do meditation. You know, do you smoke heroin through a pipe? I don't even know. Needle, I guess. I gotta research my analogies better.
I get it.
Yeah. And so, you know, you do feel pumped, but you also feel scared.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, you know, again, this is being recorded. I want you to listen to just these last 10 or 15 minutes, I think, since we talked about, you know, that vulnerability thing. And here, a lot of times it actually takes that active energy, like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to stand up to this thing. And then you're going to hear this voice that says, oh, you're never going to be able to change. And that's an opportunity for you to say, you know, screw you. I'm not going to live in this state of fear or pressure anymore. And you're going to go to work tomorrow, and you're going to have like a dozen opportunities for external validation. Right? Maybe there's like a guy you have a crush on, and you know, you're going to look to see if he's like looking over at you. And that's an opportunity right there. You know, screw you. I'm not going to value that over determining my own self-worth. And really just get a feeling of, like, empowerment about it. I'm taking the power back. You are wrestling away this capacity to, you know, be the CEO in your mind. You determine how you feel. Not this person or that person or that job or this medal or your mom or that grade or anything like that. And when you are really able to kind of, like, pump yourself up, like you said, you're like Rocky, you know. You can play Rocky music in the background, and eventually,
totally just popped in my head too.
Well, Rocky.
Yeah.
I was thinking Rocky IV, with against Drago in the cold tundra of Russia. Yeah, you do that over and over, and there's where the engine comes from. That's the motivation. That comes from that sense of empowerment. And then it's just a matter of repetition. And the great news is these things that are really sources of external validation are now just opportunities for you to take a stand.
Cool.
Do you feel like that's something that you can recognize and apply yourself toward?
Yeah, I do.
Good. I think you can too. And you have the advantage of having really horrible symptoms, because oftentimes bad symptoms are like the greatest motivator.
Seriously.
In my experience, like working with someone who like just has a little bit of anxiety doesn't have nearly as much motivation as someone that has like fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue syndrome or, you know, crushing anxiety. So I think the motivation is there for you.
Cool.
All right. So I feel like for you, you know, implementing some of the stuff that I talked about in other areas of the call, but also really learning to stand up for yourself and break free from that addiction and, you know, gravitate toward that place of self-love, your symptoms are going to fall off because your body isn't going to have anything to rebel against anymore.
Dude, that makes me so happy.
Yeah, I've worked with enough people to tell you, you know, this is what's going on with you. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So are you happy with yourself in the call, even though you didn't break down and everything got better?
It could have gone better.
What's that?
I said it could have gone better.
No, I think it went great. I think that this was a really... I actually do think that what you talked about was a really, really valuable piece and component that I actually haven't addressed yet on any of these teleconferences, so I think it was actually more helpful than you know, but I think, is you know, the important thing is it was helpful to you.
Yeah, it really was.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Lane.
No, thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Incidentally, I think that was a really, really valuable call for us, where it's like, it doesn't always need to be where you break down crying or you get in touch with these emotions or you have this cathartic experience. A lot of times it's just recognizing a certain pattern and saying, to hell with this, I'm going to change it, and really just getting a lot of energy and being active and working toward it. You know, I think that movies like Good Will Hunting are always promoting the fact that, like, you need to have a cathartic experience in order to have any real movement. But a lot of times it's actually just seeing, this is what I'm doing, and it's going to take an active effort to break this habit, and I'm going to do it. So I thought that was really great, and, you know, it's not anything that we had ever talked about.
Well, that's encouraging. It's encouraging because, I mean, if you don't have the cathartic thing and you recognize that there's something that you need to do, I mean, I thought the most interesting thing was when you were saying, but do you believe it? Because sometimes I feel like there are things which I know, but I don't necessarily believe them as strongly as I want to believe them. And it's encouraging to hear you say, well, if you stick at it, if you really put your mind to it, if you decide that that's important to you, you can have change anyway.
I read a book on Buddhism maybe 15 years ago, and it was like, oh, bugs are just as important as people. We're all life. And I was like, oh, that's really great. Like, I like that. Like, I'm not going to kill bugs anymore. And so for like 6 months, I didn't kill bugs, but I didn't really care. I didn't really value them. I was doing it because I wanted to value them. But after about 6 months, it was like the feeling actually followed the behavior, and I started caring. You know, so a lot of times, just like engaging in a specific intervention, it's kind of like a top-down approach, but it can work backward.
Okay. That's encouraging. That's good to know. So I did a little call for questions there. We have someone in the chat room named CMA who has a question. So CMA says, Alan, that was wonderful. Many people in the chat room have echoed that. And what's interesting is there's been a couple of people who have said that they relate to all three separate calls. It's kind of interesting how there are so many commonalities in all of those.
Mm-hmm. But
Do you
I
think there's
really
a
feel like we really addressed like different aspects of each. I was really happy with the variety of stuff that we addressed today. Just you can't always plan for it, but I think it
Yeah.
worked out really well.
That's good. I like I said, I have to go back and listen to it another one. But CMA has finished typing her question. So my question is, if we see ourselves having all of what was discussed in the three cases, does that make us more complex, or is that just my TMS personality feeling too much is wrong with me? That's an awesome question.
Well, I think that all three callers had really similar issues, you know, and we just addressed different components of it. I think that when it comes down to it, the reason people have symptoms, it's kind of a universal theory.
Yeah.
You don't treat yourself nicely, and that can be manifested in a lot of different ways. You know, you depend too much on external validation, you don't stand up for yourself, you don't soothe yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right, those, but I think that those are all symptoms of the same underlying thing.